animal rights, there are very few terms that are going to be as divisive as that. Why? Because often people will say on different sides of either the religious spectrum or call it a cultural political spectrum, what does it mean for animals to have rights? Are rights and responsibilities intimately connected? Can you have rights without a responsibility? Does it make sense for us to give rights to animals? And this becomes relevant in our discussion this week on the concept of Tsar Balei Chaim. Now, from a Jewish standpoint, there might be multiple reasons why a person should not cause pain to the animal kingdom. And this could be for the self, that I should not be the type of person who engages in cruelty, to the respect and validation of the animal's feeling itself. Those are two distinct ways of approaching this commandment. But if we step back a bit for a moment, we discuss the idea of, look at this from a cultural standpoint. Because in today's day and age, animal rights and the protection of animal rights is something that's quite in vogue. Veganism, vegetarianism, all forms of isms that encourage people to take seriously the suffering of animals. A raising awareness to the cruelty of animal farming, factory farming, for example, all have very good and very important messages to the contemporary, thinking, connected, morally sensitive individual. But let's look at this from a religious standpoint. And the value of looking at it from a religious standpoint is that it sort of gives us a foundation for the responsibility that we feel intuitively. To break this down, from a material secular standpoint, you ask, why should you not cause pain to animals? It says, because, well, I have two options in front of me. We all have the intuition that it's wrong to cause pain to animals, but a genuine question might be why. Now, yes, it doesn't feel nice for you to do it, so don't do it. Let me do it. Why can you compel me not to? Well, there's two options. Option one is that the state makes it illegal, in which case you're breaking the law. Fair enough, and I know what it means to follow laws and be part of a society. The other option is a bit trickier, because you can't rely on classical moral arguments that you can when it comes to why I shouldn't cause pain and suffering to a human being. Because a human being, I know what it means to be human, and people who don't share that intuition that you should not cause pain and suffering to a human being, or treat a human being as a means, we kind of kick these people out of society. We don't let these people exist in society because we feel they're lacking a certain moral foundation that is a required principle to be part of a healthy society. If you don't think there is anything wrong, or you don't feel the wrongness in taking advantage of people, you become a problem. So the language we use in a religious context for this are mishpatim. Mishpatim, which we discussed in our previous lectures, is the idea that there are certain things that I just know by dint of being human. I shouldn't take advantage of another person. I shouldn't cause suffering to another person. Yes, as a religious person, I have a divine mandate, but I don't need that. I know what it means to be a human being. I know what it means to have the experience of being a human being. And I shouldn't do to others what I don't want done to myself. This is the most basic foundation of morality when it comes to other people. But when it comes to the animal kingdom, you don't actually have that because they're not human. In which case, from a secular standpoint, you really have two options. One, the societal position that it's illegal, it's unhealthy for the state to experience or engage with people who cause suffering to animals. The other option is to level the playing field and simply say, well, true, but the mistake in your premise, Mr. Religious Person, is that there is no difference fundamentally between me and an animal. We are both of the animal kingdom, just yes, I have a slightly larger prefrontal cortex and have the ability to appreciate Mozart and engage in literature, speech, and engineering, but when it comes down to it on a fundamental level, we are all part of the animal kingdom. Thereby the language that is used, I don't eat other animals. Why? Because an animal and me are the same, in which case I've leveled the playing field, in which case I'm using or gaining access to the classical moral intuitions that I had in the context of Mishpatim. Now, obviously, they wouldn't use the language of Mishpatim, but they would use the language of the level playing field, which makes the moral intuitions that when I engage with other people also apply when I engage with my relationship with the animal kingdom. That is the classical philosophical argument in relationship to veganism or secular veganism and secular animal rights. Rav Shamshon Afar Hirsch obviously takes this from a different standpoint, but it's important to point out he doesn't deny the feeling of the animal. He thinks the motivating factor behind this clearly is the suffering of the animal, but it falls under the category of chukim, which means a chuk is that which is a statute, a principle of engaging in the world that has its ultimate understandable, or its ultimate rationale in a relationship with God. To put it in a most in its most basic framework, I should not cause suffering to animals. Yes, because animals experience pain, and I can understand on a basic level why that might be problematic, but on a fundamental level, what holds me back is a recognition that God recognizes their suffering. Thereby, like a choik is, as we've discussed previously, not irrational. No, there's a rationale behind it, but its grounding is in the relationship with the divine. The idea that there is a divine mandate, or a divine knowledge, or a knowledge that transcends my own experience, why this is an expression of justice. Now, when it comes to the suffering of animals, yeah, I might find it icky, but I might not like people doing it, but I can't call upon my moral intuitions that I call when it comes to mishpatim. I just can't. Yeah, you don't like torturing animals, I do. A person can say, well, obviously I don't, but a person can say, well, what do you, how do you argue against that? A person bought the animal, he wants to torture it. Now, as a religious person, I can say that's really icky and horrible and don't do it, but I don't get to argue on the same level of you tell me you did that to a person. There's a difference in intuition there. One relies on my relationship with other human beings and being a human being. The other one doesn't. Rav Hirsch injects this with the mandate of a choik. Yes, on a fundamental level, why don't we engage in tsar balei chayim, the suffering of animals? It's because it's a choik. Why? There is a reason that I perhaps don't have access to. There is a premise that I don't have access to. That is in the relationship with the divine. Once I've accepted that as a foundation, Rav Hirsch then incorporates all those other intuitions that the classical vegan or animal rights arguments go straight to. What do I mean by that? They'll argue about the suffering of the animal, the twitching of pain of the animal that you should not want to do, because if you want to develop yourself into be a moral human being, this clearly is a problem. But when it comes down to it, the foundation that holds me to that is a religious conviction. Yes, I share the intuition about the evil in causing unnecessary pain and suffering to animals, but I have a foundation for that intuition. That foundation of that intuition is a divine mandate. Thereby, it doesn't stop, but also just to express, this also gives rise to when it is okay to use animals. We have a principle within Judaism, just to really focus in on the importance of this, the treatment of animals is not only you should not cause pain and suffering to animals, but if you see an animal suffering, you have a duty to go and relieve that suffering. To the extent of breaking a, what they call a derabbanon in Hilchos Shabbos, it is treated on the same level as a non-fatally ill human being, meaning it's treated quite seriously, and this is even if the owner doesn't care. The owner can be sitting by while his animal suffers. You are duty-bound to go and protect and help that animal. You aren't allowed to let it experience suffering. So we are accessing these intuitions, but on the foundational level, it is sitting on a resting point of a divine mandate. The ultimate reason behind it, I don't know. I have the intuition. So to perhaps articulate this another way, to perhaps give more clarity, classical arguments for why I should protect the well-being of animals relies on intuitions, but not the same intuitions when it comes to protecting human beings, in which case you have two options. You have either the state or just leveling the playing field. A religious person doesn't have to level the playing field. I can recognize the individual, the uniqueness of the human character, but also the responsibility to protect the animal kingdom. Why? Because yes, I have the intuition of looking after animals and not causing them suffering, but what holds me to that is the divine mandate. Which means, the way you could perhaps put it, is that the responsibility that is given to me by the fact that I'm human compels me to look after the animal kingdom. The very thing that someone's looking at me and say, listen, you should care about the animal kingdom, at its root, it's a divine mandate. And on top of that, I build the other intuitions of what it means to look after the animal kingdom, not cause unnecessary suffering, because on a foundational level, it's a divine responsibility based off a chayk. But this also opens a door to when I am allowed to take advantage of the animal kingdom. I haven't leveled the playing field. I haven't treated the animal as a human. I treat the animal as subordinate. But being subordinate, I am in a position of power, which gives me a responsibility. That responsibility is what compels me to not take advantage of the animal. And this is often a tricky argument, because when it comes to having no divine foundation or divine mandate that calls upon the greater part of you to act with responsibility towards the animal kingdom, and the response you've taken is to level the playing field and say, I don't eat other animals, thereby I'm not going to... But there's a problem there. Once you've leveled the playing field, you have no right to take advantage of an animal in any way, shape, or form. I mean, you kind of have to be a jadist at that point and like sweep the floor in front of you. If you genuinely consider the animal kingdom, be it fish, be it bees, be it rodents, be it whatever it may be, how can you take advantage of them? Because if it was another human being, you wouldn't be allowed to. Which really puts you to a tricky spot, because you can't exist without in some way taking advantage of the animal kingdom, so you have a moral inconsistency. You can't, I don't know, get wheat without destroying habitats. You can't plow the field without destroying certain amount of habitats and certain amount of animal life in the service of your eating. So it's one of those things that, not that every religious position is perfect in the sense that it could be argued for to the nth degree. Every position has its difficulties, but one very stark difficulty with a secular argument is that you have no religious foundation for calling upon me to act with responsibility towards the animal kingdom. The only response you have is that, well, what's the difference between you and an animal? And based off that, compel me to look after the animal kingdom. But the danger there is that, well, if it's a level playing field and you want to be morally consistent, well, then you have a problem. At what point can you take advantage? From a religious standpoint, we are allowed to take advantage of the animal kingdom if it's sensible, if it's humane, if it's needed and done in the least painful way possible. Now, definitely a discussion has to be had to the way animals are treated today, even by Jewish butcheries and slaughterhouses. That clearly is a problem. And the answer to such a problem isn't and the need for the amount of food and where do we draw the line on the need for humanity versus the suffering of the animal is a conversation that clearly needs to be had and hopefully is being had. But the conversation happens because of responsibility to minimize the suffering of the animal in service of humanity, not because we are leveling the playing field. So, I hope all that made sense, perhaps a bit more philosophical than usual, but it's an interesting discussion to have, because when you have a choik, it gives a foundation that is perhaps lacking when it comes to just simply either relying on the state or leveling the playing field or leveling the landscape between what it means to be an animal and a human. As always, thank you for your time, have a wonderful week, and a wonderful upcoming Shabbos.